The AC Podcast is a ministry of Apologetics Canada and is supported by the generous donations of our listeners. If you would like to partner with us in this ministry, please go to apologeticscanada.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Apologetics Canada podcast. This is Steve Kim.
Andy Steiger.
Yeah, so I hear you've got some random things off the internet. Well, you've been venturing into the dark corners.
Well, actually, a friend of mine sent me a link to an article that was deeply disturbing. In fact, I'm sure we'll talk more about it on the show today. Uh-huh. But it's about this this drive-in church in Florida. So there's this video. We got to post it on the show notes. You know, seriously, if you get a chance, go onto our website and watch this video. It will definitely challenge you. And the video is very well done and will make a lot of what we talk about today, I'm sure, poignant. Before, though, I could get even into the article, I was arrested by this meme that I've never heard of. Have you heard of this meme that goes around called Florida Man?
Florida Man, no. Yeah. This is new to me.
Okay, it was new to me as well. So I actually didn't even make my way through the article. That caught my attention, and I quickly found myself wandering into the depths of the internet and truly amazed. So there is this meme called Florida Man, and what they do, I didn't even believe it at first. I had to, you know, look into it, but they take real news headlines from Florida that start with Florida Man. And so it's like Florida Man dot, dot, dot. Ah. And the news headlines are unbelievable. But you can click on them and it links you to the actual news story. So here are just some of my favorites that I came across. Florida Man steals $2 million in Lego.
In Lego?
In Lego, yeah.
Wow.
I don't even know what to say to that. I mean, in some ways, the man needs to be congratulated. I mean, how do you steal $2 million?
Yeah,
in Lego. Like, how's that even possible? Here's another one. Florida man puts dragon lizard in his mouth, smacks people with it. You know, honestly, the United States never disappoints. You know, what a treasure, what a gift the U.S. is. Here's another one. This is one of my personal favorites. Two favorites here. Drunk machete wielding Florida man chases neighbor on lawnmower.
Wow, Florida. This is a gift that keeps on giving.
Oh, buddy.
Oh, man.
And here's this one. 82-year-old Florida man slashes 88-year-old Florida woman's tires with ice pick for stealing his seat at bingo. Tell me that doesn't just typify Florida.
Wow. Oh, man.
Unbelievable. So, any rate, once that, you know, I got done chasing down those memes, I went back to the article, and the article is deeply disturbing, you know, because when you're watching this video of these people in their cars driving up to church, you know, this drive-in church,
right?
And they're listening to this guy preach, and then they all get handed out communion in these like prepackaged cups things. It's almost like they're in an airline and they undo their communion thing and they take communion. And then a guy in a golf cart goes along and takes the offering from car to car. And it's just deeply convicting in that you're seeing all these people come to church. They are sheltering themselves from one another.
Yeah.
They are relationally isolating themselves.
It's an archipelago, basically.
Yeah, they are islands to themselves, coming to church, hearing the message, getting what they need from it, and then they leave. Now, interestingly enough, by the way, the Crystal Cathedral, have you ever heard of the Crystal Cathedral? Well-known, famous church in Orange County. If you ever go there, that's how they started. They actually started as a drive-in church, and then it became this massive church. I can't remember the pastor's name, but I actually met him at an airport once. And these days, it now the Crystal Cathedral belongs to the Catholic Church. They went bankrupt. I know. So the thing is, those isn't that one of the challenges of the church? How easy it is, because you could watch this video and think, man, these people are so messed up. You know, they totally don't get church. They've come to church in a car. They don't even get out of the car, and they think they're attending church. But at the same time, the video is so convicting if you watch it, because in many ways, we are no better. There are so many of us that come to church as islands unto ourselves with absolutely no desire to connect with anyone else.
That's defeating the whole purpose of church, right? I mean, it was supposed to be a community of people that kind of basically, this is the kingdom of God on earth, right? Mm-hmm. As we live in submission to God, in obedience to God. When I hear about this drive-in church, the image that immediately comes to my mind is fast food restaurants back in the day.
Right.
Right. You just drive up and these servers will come, you know, on their roller skates or whatever and deliver your food and you could just go. You didn't even have to get out of the car. That's the kind of stuff that comes to my mind. Is it's like you're just there for a service.
That's right. I don't think humans recognize just how narcissistic and broken they are, that we are very quick to view the world as all about us. Mm. You know, it's all about my needs. It's all about what I want. And in many ways, in the West, we view church as something that we consume. It's a product for us. And I think you're right, by the way, Steve. Yeah. We've absolutely lost the understanding of not just the purpose of church, but the purpose of a human being.
Do you think in that sense, the Eastern world, if you will, lives it out better?
Yeah, you know what is sad but true is in some ways, I would actually argue, Steve, in the past, the Eastern lived it out better. I don't think that's the case anymore.
Yeah. Especially where the Enlightenment thinking has spread, like in Korea or Japan, it seems to me.
I was doing some research on this, and basically from the 18th century on, this has become an ever grow. I would argue that this has always been with humanity. This isn't a new thing, but that from the 18th century on, and many historians would argue with the advent of modernity, this has become an ever increasing problem to the point of which today that it's an epidemic that's global. And I think you could make that argument by just simply looking at birth rates. That's an argument that, you know, we could shelve for another time, but that's how actually a lot of historians or others that would look at this kind of point to. If you look at birth rates, if you look at surveys of people giving up on relationships, you see that this is a global problem. But in Asia, and particularly, you know, Singapore, Japan, China, this is an incredibly pervasive problem. So it's kind of like they're in a different aspect of it than we are. But I think that we're all in a similar problem.
Right. Okay. So right now at Northview Community Church where we work, we're going through what we call Preacher's Choice, or as the summer Mix It Up series, where each preacher gets to choose the topic that they want to preach on.
Right.
And you preached not too long ago on the value of human life. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So first, let me just give a little context. I am the director of Apologetics Canada, but I'm also a pastor at Northview. And there's a reason for that, and that we have our offices at a church, and that I am participating in the life of the church. And Steve, you participate in the life of the church as well.
In whatever way I can,
Yeah. Like, if you don't know, Steve is ridiculously good at everything. It's disgusting. and he plays like every musical instrument, so he's often playing on the worship team and helping out in different aspects of the life of the church. So one of the aspects that I get to do as a pastor here is I get the privilege of preaching periodically. And so, yeah, I was participating in the summer series, Preacher's Choice, and so I spoke on the topic from research that I had been working on with the Human Project. I spoke on the topic of what is the value of human life.
Yeah.
The whole point behind this that I just want our listeners to understand is this idea that when you create anything, any act of intention is an act of purpose. The two go hand in hand. You can't have one without the other. Mm-hmm. In my sermon, I give an example of a graduate student who challenged me on this. I was giving a lecture once in Wisconsin at the Polanyi Society, and she challenged me on this point and just said, well, I'm a painter. What if I were to create a painting with no purpose? You know, and I just explained to her, well, that's what you would have.
Yeah, that is your purpose.
You would have a painting with the purpose of having no purpose.
So just to make sure that I heard you correctly, you said intention and purpose, they go hand in hand. Did you mean creation and purpose?
Yeah, I would just kind of put all those in one basket.
Okay.
I'm sure you could tease those out more, but any act of create. Thanks for just clarifying that, though. Any act of creation is an act of purpose. And my point with that was with regards to Genesis chapter 1, verse 1. In the beginning, God creates the heavens and the earth. This isn't some random act that God's doing, not sure what he's doing. Any act of creation by a person is an act of purpose. There's a reason to what God's doing.
Because if you think about it, really, I mean, there is – can we really create without purpose? Like, I was trying to come up with an example, and I can't even.
I can't either.
Yeah, even in cases where, you know, I try to just randomly make whatever shapes in the sand.
Yep.
That is, in a sense, on a more meta level, that is a purposeful act, because I am doing this randomly with a purpose, so to speak. That's a bit of a paradox there.
Yeah. But you know what's interesting though, Steve, because some people be like, why is this conversation important? And I think the conversation is important because we've got a society that doesn't understand these really simplistic ideas. Mm. And because they don't grasp these ideas, it's so easy for us to get confused about what a thing is, such as a robot, for example, such as artificial intelligence. And this is where you can have a society that thinks that a robot is a person because they don't understand what a thing is. They don't understand that a robot would be a machine made to mimic a human being.
Yeah.
Right? Instead, what they would do is they just make this logical jump just to say, well, it is a person because it can mimic a person.
Not too long ago, I read an article from the Federalist titled, "We Are Afraid of Robots Because We Don't Believe in God." And basically in it, what this author was arguing is that, well, we basically reduced ourselves into just basically meat machines, meat computers, and all of our thinking processes and things like that are reduced down to certain logical processes.
See, right? People don't understand that when they're trying to humanize a robot, that they're actually doing the opposite. They're actually dehumanizing themselves. They're not making the machine into a person. They're actually making a person into a machine.
And we would say much the same thing about animals. When
absolutely.
We try to humanize animals. I mean, there are certain benign forms of that. I mean, we do that with children, like the movie Babe or something like that. Never mind that in that movie, you know, you never show the cannibalism of pigs. You know,
I think you're talking about anthropomorphic language where we give human characteristics to something that's not a human.
But then there's the sort of the malign form, if you will, where, you know, like humanity and animals are equated in value. And that I think that's where it starts to go wrong. So just to kind of take a step back to what I was saying earlier, what this author then was saying is, well, because we reduced our thinking and our rationality and everything to computation, when something comes along that does much the same thing, then we start to wonder, well, is this a person now? Because it can do what we can do.
Right.
But then as I was reading, I was thinking, well, shouldn't you be asking what it is before you ask what it does?
Exactly. And so, Steve, this happens in two levels. You have animals that are made of the same material that a human being's made of. So people make the argument, well, they're the same thing then. Where they're made of the same stuff. Yeah. Or you'll have the machine argument. Well, the machine can mimic what the person can do, so then they're the same thing. See, and this is why it's so fundamental to understand that we never define a thing that way. Mm-hmm. Naturally, we always define a thing by its purpose. And that's how we'll define what it is.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we have a bunch of items here on the table right now, and we can look at the microphone, you know, the cables and the phone and the water bottle and everything. Everything that we look at, I'm like, well, what is this thing in my hand? It's a water bottle. Well, what makes it a water bottle? I'm like, well, it's a container made for the purpose of holding water. And that's why we call it a water bottle.
Exactly. Where this starts to run aground or things start to get interesting is, well, what do we do with human beings? Mm-hmm. Because I didn't make myself. Right? I didn't give myself a purpose. And so now what happens is you're making this transition, right? You're going, you're transitioning into theology, where you're looking at the things of which God has made and the rules that he has applied to those objects, or the, we would say the purposes that he has created for the universe, for life, for human life. And so That then becomes a question of, well, what is the purpose that God created human beings for? And in my sermon, the point that I was getting at is that we have been created for relationship.
Now, everything you're talking about there connects really well with an email that we received not too long ago, right around the time of your sermon, Andy. This email came in from a doctor. The email reads like this: in the context of the church and value of life, how does the church address our human mortality in light of our knowledge of eternity? Given your PhD work, how would you address this to those in the church first, followed by those in the world? Why do I ask the question? I constantly find in the medical world that Christians fail to accept God's calling, and science tries to grant patients quantity of life, but not necessarily a life of fulfillment and contentment. How do we exit this world with dignity and value?
Well, he recommends, or he talks about the book Dr. Atul Gawande. It's a very famous book called Being Mortal. Yeah, which, by the way, there's an excellent book that brings up a number of points. In fact, he actually says, for which I am amazed, there has not been a better book written to address this from a biblical perspective for those who follow Christ. And he's right. We need more Christians to address this. I've actually heard from a number of doctors over the last year who really are reaching out and saying, we need help thinking through some of the issues that we're facing. And I think that this is an issue that our culture has been facing for a while now. Mm-hmm. In particular, I think that we've come to a place in modernity, we've come to a place where our narcissism has reached this height of a consumer mentality where we don't even know any longer what to do with the elderly in particular. If you read the book Being Mortal, there's an interesting section in it. In it, he tells the story of Bill Thomas, who wrote a book called Second Wind. Dr. Thomas is a doctor from Harvard and ended up going into working at a nursing home. And it's an interesting story that he tells. And in it, Dr. Thomas is trying to, grapple with this nursing home and just how depressing it is, and asking those deeper questions of, is this good for people? Is this the way we were meant to die? I mean, is this the way we were meant to, live out the remaining years of our life? And so in the story, he gets this idea of, what if we give these people a purpose? What if we bring in some animals? What if we bring in some dogs and some cats? And in fact, he gets this idea to bring in 100 parakeets.
Wow.
And so they do this, and they begin to see positive effects that this begins to have on these elderly people. One of the things, though, that as I began to look more into this, that I found really concerning is one of the things Dr. Gawande talks about is that there's three plagues in these nursing homes. That is boredom, loneliness, and helplessness. And in fact, one of the things I found disturbing as I looked into this is that 97% of physicians have no training in geriatrics. And this is also interesting. In 1950, most people died at home. Today, 17% of people die at home.
Wow, yeah.
83% die in an institution. This reminds me of an excellent book that came out called Alone Together by Cheryl Turkle. In fact, in my sermon, I referenced the book. She says this that I think is really telling. She says, the very fact that we now design and manufacture robot companions for the elderly marks a turning point. We ask technology to perform what used to be love's labor, taking care of each other. It's interesting to me that we've now viewed technology as a solution to doing the things that we don't want to do. She goes on to write this. She says, young children and the elderly are not a problem until we decide that we don't have the time or resources to attend to them. Right. We seem tempted to declare phases of the life cycle problems and to send technologies to solve them. And we're seeing this not just with the elderly, but with children as well. You're seeing places like Japan wanting to develop technologies that can do childcare. that, you know, can raise your children for you. You know, it's the Jetsons, right? And they can do so at an affordable price or whatever. And we have to start asking deeper questions as a society. Is that a good idea? You know, should we be doing those kind of things? And maybe even something that is more biblical is not just asking what shouldn't I be doing, but what should I be doing? Yeah. So with regards to the question that came in, you know, how would I apply my PhD work to this issue? And I've been thinking a lot about that. So I don't want to come across like, oh, I've got this all figured out. I don't think I've got this all figured out, but I'm in the process of thinking through this issue. And as I've been thinking through it, it's becoming more and more apparent to me that if we understand, you know, from a Christian worldview, that the purpose of human life is to be in relationship with God and to be in relationship with people, that begins to change the way that we understand ourselves and other people. You see, in a narcissistic culture, and particularly a consumeristic culture, we tend to just think about what I want, mm-hmm. you know, and what's going to make my life better. And if my elderly parents are going to be an imposition to me, well, they're not going to make my life better. So I want, then it's easier just to institutionalize them or whatever it might be. Or maybe I just buy a robot that will care for or tend to them.
Yeah, you know, in Korea, that right around the time, you know, I'm an 80s kid, right? And right around that time, as I was growing up, there was this, it was a bit of a social issue to send your parents to an institution, because according to the sort of the Confucianistic cultural sensitivities, I mean, your parents, I mean, my goodness, you ought to respect them and obey them and love them and cherish them, right? It's a very hierarchical kind of a society. You respect your parents like you would a king, kings and queens. So to send them off to an institution, like, is that the right thing to do? Is it beneficial for them? But I mean, a lot of that was very much frowned upon because it was seen as, well, you're just sending off your parents to an institution because you just don't want to bear the burden of taking care of them in their old age.
But notice how that's frowned upon because of cultural conditioning. Whereas I think as Christians, we need to view these questions from an understanding of what is the purpose of human life? What in fact are you? And if you believe, as the Bible teaches, that you are made in the image of a relational God, you are a relational being that has been made to be in relationship with God and relationship with people, that starts to change the way you live your life. Right. It starts to change the choices that you make. See, one of the things that's already starting to change the way I understand even things like church. You see, and a lot of people ask the question, do I need to go to church? You know, because maybe I don't want to go to church, or I don't want to wake up early and go to church, people just don't even understand the purpose of church, right? Mm. They don't even understand that they were made for church, right? The church is being in relationship with God and being in relationship with people. Church is good for you. Mm. But more than that, people don't understand that those other people at church need you to go to church. Mm-hmm. You know, they need community with you. See, this is why I brought up that drive-in movie thing. I mean, the idea of drive-in church is craziness. Mm-hmm. You know, you come as just an, as you said, Stephen, island unto yourself. You've completely missed the point. Those other people in those other cars, sheltered in their steel boxes, they need community as much as you need community. You need each other.
Yeah, like need in the sense of like, I mean, this is what fulfills the purpose, right? It's also not just a matter of pragmatism, but because I think that's often how we think about it, right? You know, in terms of convenience, in terms of what works for me, what I want to do, right? So, but you're saying this is a matter of not just a pragmatic thing. Yes, we see some pragmatic benefit. Like, I mean, even as you bring in those animals, for example, like Dr. Bill Thomas, and you know, as the elderly form bonds with these animals and things like that, you see this drastic improvement in their condition and things like that. So because there's
being in relationship with nature is a good thing. You were created for that, but it's not enough. So we understand that we were created for more than that. And so not just is your elderly parent created for more than that, you are created for more than that.
Right.
So what I'm trying to say then is not only does your elderly parent need you, but you need your elderly parent.
Mm-hmm.
This is part of what it actually means to be a human being,
yeah.
is to be in community with one another, even people that are difficult. By the way, that includes children. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's good for you to be a parent, even though it's difficult. That's part of being a human being, is being in a relationship. I find it fascinating as we look around the world at the dwindling birth rates, that places like Japan, for example, a recent survey just came out and 70% of men are not in a relationship currently. 60% of women are currently not in a relationship. By the way, Japan is hoping to bring their birth rate up to 1.8 by the year 2025.
Hmm.
The problem is people aren't even in relationships. Of those people that I just quoted that aren't in a relationship, 30% of the men and 26% of the women have no desire to be in a relationship. And when asked why in the surveys, the response is continually the same. Because relationships are challenging and are difficult and they're messy, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But what they don't understand is it's good for you. It's what you were made for.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, not being in those relationships are actually going to be a detriment to you, not a benefit.
Yeah, because when I look at stuff like that and I think to myself, well, it's almost like we are gas engines trying to run on diesel or something like that. It seems to me like we're trying to do something that we're just not designed for, right? Mm. And of course, it's going to create problems. I mean, put diesel in your gas engine, you know what happens, right? It just doesn't work. It breaks the car.
Yep.
In the same way, if we're meant for relationship, which we believe we are,
yep.
Then trying to live just on our own, isolated in our steel box in a church or in your families as you isolate yourself from your elderly, you know, parents and things like that, it's only going to bring on, I think, a culture of death. And I think we're seeing that.
Oh, and it's interesting, like Cheryl Turkle's book, one of the things she says over and over again is you have a world of loneliness. So many people are lonely and desiring intimacy. They're desiring relationship, but yet they're afraid of it. You know, they want community, but they're afraid of community. Here, I love what Paul says in Philippians chapter 2. You've heard this many times before, I'm sure. But think about this anew from the conversation we're having right now. He says, chapter 2, verse 1, if you have any encouragement from being united with Christ, now, relationship, right? If any comfort from his love, if any fellowship with the Spirit, if any tenderness and compassion, then make my joy complete by being like-minded. See, God values relationship. And he's saying, be like-minded, value relationship. He says, having the same love, being one in spirit and purpose. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, but in humility consider others better than yourself. Value other people, mm-hmm. right? It's interesting. We get so used to saying what you shouldn't be doing that we forget to say, well, what should I be doing? And I think it's interesting what Jesus says there, right? Jesus is encouraging us to value relationships. Do unto others, Jesus says, as you would have them do unto you.
We tend to think of morality in very negative terms. Don't do this. Don't do that. But here it's like, well, do this, value others higher than yourselves. Jesus, even when he phrases the golden rule, when he frames it, it's different from other world leaders like, you know, Confucius and Muhammad or whatever.
Or Buddha, I think.
Or the Buddha, yeah. Because they said, don't do to others what you would not have them do to you. Well, what Jesus is saying is, no, do unto others what you would have them do to you. Mm-hmm. And right there, I think it can only happen if you make that sacrifice where there is that agape love, right?
Now, that's the interesting part, though, isn't it? Because it raises the question, well, why do you do it? See, in verse 4, he says, each of you should look not only to your own interests, but also to the interests of others. Why? You know, I think that that's the question our secular culture is asking. Why? Why should I have children? It's a burden. Why should I take care of my elderly parent? It's a burden. You know, why not have technology or these other things, you know, do it or what or whatnot. And the Bible's saying, because you were made for these relationships and it's good for them and it is good for you. Verse 5, your attitude should be the same as that of Christ Jesus, who being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be held on to, but made himself nothing, taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness.
I mean, right there, God took on, if you will, the burden of being with us. He actually put on flesh. He came to live with us. As one paraphrase puts it, like he moved into the neighborhood, right, to live
and
with
us. Served.
Right. And so that's why in—
Because that's what it means to be human.
Yeah. And so in the book of Hebrews then, what we have is this high priest, Jesus Christ, who's not just this kind of aloof, standoffish, kind of a very distant figure, but somebody who's gone through what you've gone through and can sympathize with where you're at. And there is this kind of, it takes this human-divine relationship to yet another level.
And becomes our example. Because what do we see then in Jesus? We see that he lives out the purpose of humanity perfectly. He loves God and he loves people. And in him, we can learn what it means to be fully human. And to be human means that you're going to need to learn to serve and to sacrifice, because that's what it takes to be in community with each other.
My goodness, just think about what that would look like. Even, I mean, let's bring this a little bit more down to earth. I mean, you're a parent, I'm a parent. What would it look like if we gave ourselves a little bit more to our children and to our wives, right? I mean, just think about that, what that might look like. I mean, there are some days when I just come home from work and I'm just super tired. I don't want to do anything other than just maybe flip through my books or on my phone or whatever. I have young kids, right? And they're very energetic. They want to climb on top of me and all that kind of stuff. I'm just like, oh, just leave me alone. But that's where I can make that difference, right? Give myself a little bit more. And also, on a more pragmatic kind of a level too, you know, another 30, 40, maybe 50, if I'm lucky, years from now, I'll be in my deathbed. If I'm, you know, God willing, maybe I won't die by accident.
You're Asian, Steve. Don't you have like another 100 years to live?
Yeah. And there's a point where, you know, like I'll probably look like I'm still like 30 or something like that, right up until I'm like 70. And then just one day I'll wake up and I'll just have combusted.
It's the Asian way.
Yeah.
But
I think to myself, like, what am I going to think when I'm in my deathbed as I look at my children? Gosh, like, I don't want to think like, gosh, I should have spent more time with them.
Well, they're going to be in the position that you're currently in.
Right.
They're going to be caring for you. And so it changes the way you view, how are you caring for them now? And how would you like them to care for you when you are in need?
Exactly. Do unto others what you would have them do to you. Mm-hmm. Not exactly in the sense of, you know, it's tit for tat.
Yeah.
But really, like, you have to start with yourself. You got to give of yourself first. We'll break the cycle of this selfishness that we observe around us.
It's just pervasive. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And by the way, I'm not trying to pretend like I'm above it. Doing this research and thinking about these things, and as I pray and study the Bible, I'm continually convicted of how narcissistic and broken I am.
Yeah. I thank God for grace, right?
Yeah.
For both you and me.
But it also at the same time is changing the way that I want to parent and the way that I want to be a parent and having my children. It's changing the way that I view relationship, which is changing the way that I live. And so, by the way, just to end on with regards to how do we exit this world with dignity and value, the question that was being asked, that's a big question. But I will say this. I think that one is that sin and evil is not the way that the world was meant to be. And I think that we need to fight against it with everything that we have. You know, death is not the way that the world was meant to be. And we need to fight death. But at the same time, as this person has said, we know that we have eternity waiting. And we know that we have relationship with God through Jesus Christ, and that we have hope. And so that also changes the way not only that we live, but also the way that we die. In the sense that we have the purpose to fight against death, but we don't have the fear of death. And I think that we could talk that out at another time, but that I think that changes the way that we do palliative care.
There is so much more that could be said on that. And we've done some podcasts, you know, in the past on this topic. So I'll put that up on the show notes as well if you want to get further into it. But I think this is a good place to wrap up. Thank you, listeners, for joining us. The Apologetics Canada podcast has been a ministry of Apologetics Canada. And again, to those of you who gave us some good ratings on iTunes, thank you for that. And if you haven't done that, we encourage you to do so.
Yeah, a lot of people ask, how can we help Apologetics Canada? That goes a long ways.
Yeah,
we really appreciate it.
Yes. So again, thank you. We'll come back next week with more stuff to think about. Ciao for now.